Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elgorey.
And I'm Cathy Weston. A very warm welcome this evening to the Radio Verulam's Parents Show. It's a fantastic show as usual. We've got brilliant guests. We've got Dame Alison Peacock, who'll be joining us in a moment. And we've got in the studio with us Caroline Creeby from Sandringham School. You may have heard of her if you live in St Albans. She's one of the assistant head teachers. Is that right, Caroline?
Yes.
So very warm welcome
Thank
to you. And the topic of this evening's show is how our children learn. We're focusing on what motivates children to learn, what demotivates them, what sort of a role schools have in that, what sort of a role parents have in that. So basically, we're opening up the floor to two fantastic guests. Hopefully, Dame Alison Peacock will be on the phone now. We'll just see if she's there.
Hello.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Thanks for joining us. Now, Alison, just to put it in perspective, most people within the educational community have heard of you. your reputation precedes you. You were the co-author of a book called Creating Learning Without Limits, which is a very famous book, I think, in the educational community. You're a trustee of the Teacher Development Trust, and you're very famous as well because you're the head teacher of a school called the Wroxham School in Potter's Bar in Hertfordshire, which is a primary school for children aged 4 to 11. When you were appointed head teacher, the school was in special measures, and it emerged out of special measures just 10 months later, and within 2.5 years was rated as outstanding, and subsequently reinspected many years later as outstanding. And the school, I believe, has generated international interest in what's called your Learning Without Limits creative approach to school improvement, and I believe many people from around the globe have actually visited it.
Yes, amazingly, they have.
So you're in a very good position to help us tonight.
Hope so.
So we're interested as parents in unpicking your brains about how children learn. What is it that's so special that happens in your school that encourages children to do so well?
I think that the question is incredibly complex because children learn all the time, and children are sort of pre-programmed to learn. They learn all kinds of things, and they learn the sorts of things that you might not want them to learn. They can't help but learn. That's their condition as young human beings. I think the reason that school is so important is that school hopefully is a place where the children know that they are safe, where they can be nurtured, where their ideas are going to be valued, where they're going to be heard, where they'll have so many opportunities to flourish and to grow intellectually in all kinds of ways. And I think the job that our school tries to do is to work very closely with families to ensure that every single child is highly valued and has the opportunity to try so many different experiences, so many different things, so that they, you know, build expertise in a whole range of different ways and increasingly gain confidence and love coming to school, hopefully, and love the process of learning and see it as something that they're in control of.
And I think what's striking about your school, I believe, is that you have an approach which doesn't label children in any way. Could you sort of explain what that means?
Yes, we're very passionate in our school about making sure that children are known for who they are, rather than a shorthand being given to describe the children in the green group or the children in the red group or that kind of thing. We don't organise our classrooms in those ways. The way that we work is to make sure that we give every child the opportunity to surprise us. So we are constantly seeking to tailor the curriculum that we offer to provide open-ended tasks so that within a maths lesson, the children will all be taught the same thing by the teacher, but there will be plenty of opportunity for children to extend their thinking. And the expectation on the teacher's part will be that obviously not all children are the same, but that all children should be given the opportunity constantly to be able to show what they're able to understand, so to practice skills, to build new skills, So instead of being labelled and put into a group and told this is the task that you've got to do, the way that we work is that we offer a range of tasks of increasing complexity. The children know which are the easier tasks, and they know that they can self-select, and that if they try working on something and it's easier than they thought, then they can say, "Ooh, great, I'm going to go on to the next task." Similarly, if they attempt something and it's just a bit harder than they thought it might be, there's no shame in consolidating their learning, revisiting something that they've tried before so that they can build the confidence in order that they can then take the next step up. And what this does is it means that children throughout the school absolutely love to challenge themselves. Their intrinsic motivation is about wanting to do their best, not to trample on someone else, but wanting to do their best for them. So it's all about achieving your personal best and having a pride in working hard.
And Alison, I'm just sort of trying to imagine what it's like to be a parent of a child in your school. You know, parents are very curious about how their child is doing in relation to other children. They, you know, at parents' night, they want to have an idea of how they're faring. How do you sort of manage that? Is it different in your school in that
way?
Well,
I think the difference is that, I mean, we would always say to parents, you know, if they outright want to know. You know, in the past we have national curriculum levels, and your listeners may know that that whole process of assessing children in school is changing now. But, you know, if parents wanted to know that, we would always tell them. But we focus much more, instead of talking about test results and numbers and grades, we focus much more on enabling the children to be very confident about their learning so that they can talk about what it is that they are doing to their parents. And we scaffold those conversations, so we provide family consultation events where the children prepare presentations. So our children in year 5 and 6, yesterday evening I was at a year 6 learning review meeting. All of the year 6 children individually had prepared a PowerPoint, and when it became their turn, their appointment, they would arrive, they'd sit at my desk in my office on my swivel chair, they would have their PowerPoint, they'd say to their parents and to their teacher and to myself, you know, welcome to my learning review meeting. They would have found some illustrations and some slides that highlighted their successes but also their challenges, and then what we all did in a 15-minute meeting was to take the prompts from the child, look at the child's work, listen to what the teacher said, listen to what the parents said, you know, I asked some questions as well, recorded the meeting. So, you know, very, very enabling for the child, but actually very rigorous, because everything they were saying we were testing by looking and seeing, you know, and all of us were in agreement about what we could do to try and help the child in their next steps in their learning, which is actually the whole point of assessment. Everybody wants to make things better in order that the child can learn.
And Alison, it sounds like you have great alignment between parents, what's going on at home and school, because you're inviting parents into that conversation. Is that the case?
Yes, I think we have incredibly supportive parents, but I think the reason our parents are supportive is because our children are real advocates for school. You know, they want to come to school in the first place, which helps. And they're very keen for their parents to come and see what they're doing. We have blogs on our website. We share lots of photographs and video and stories of what we're doing in school. And we try and be as accessible as we can be, because we recognise that for lots of people in society, actually school wasn't a very happy experience quite often. And our sense is it's not about hard-to-reach families. It's much more to do with schools that are quite difficult to reach themselves, actually. So we try, I'm sure we don't get it right every time, but we try to be as open and available and as friendly as we possibly can be, so that, you know, essentially what we're saying is, you know, your child is the most precious thing in your life. We want to do the best by your child. We want to listen to what your child is saying. We want to give them every opportunity we can, but we want to help you in order that you can help them.
And Alison, can I ask you, just to go back to the idea of challenging yourself, yes, how do you embed that idea in children's minds? I mean, I know my son mentions this occasionally, but it's very much depends on his mood whether he feels like challenging himself or not. You know, it's not, I don't feel like it's thoroughly embedded in
okay.
his...
Well, I think most children enjoy competition. They enjoy doing the best they can. They enjoy excelling at things. And I think what we've tried to do at Wroxham is kind of make an art of the coolness of challenging yourself. You know, when I first went to the school, when it was in difficulty, Actually, the cool thing was to act like you weren't bothered at all. The cool thing was to act as though you didn't have to move a muscle in order to learn something. So that notion that if you had to try, somehow that was demeaning. And we've completely turned that round now. So the cool thing to do in our school is to attempt something, achieve something you didn't know you were going to be able to achieve, and celebrate that. And that's a culture that permeates throughout the whole school. It's the adults as well as the children. So, you know, recently a member of staff, she got a first class honours degree. This is a member of our support staff, Emma Chebsey. She was hugely delighted, as she should be. We then celebrated that in assembly. All the children were cheering for her. You know, the sense that learning is a lifelong endeavour. It's not something that stops when you finish school. It is bound up in this idea that you've never finished something. So it's not about the grade you receive or the label that you get. It's about the thing to celebrate is embracing new ideas, trying new things. That's what life's all about, I think.
And what motivating factors do you use on a day-to-day basis?
What motivating factors do we use?
Is success enough? Is that enough?
It's not about stickers and charts. I mean, we do have a collective reward within each class where the children, we have what we call jars of jewels, and they're not really jewels. Don't tell the children. They are, you know, beads and all kinds of shiny things, and we collect those so that if someone does something kind for someone else in the class, the teacher might say, you know, take a jewel for the jewel jar, and it's a collective reward. So that if there's once the class has, you know, collectively done all kinds of things where the children can nominate this as well. The children can say, we think so and so should put a jewel in the jar because this has happened. Then there's a class reward at some point, which could be, I don't know, watching a film, or I don't know, pajamas and hot chocolate and reading a book, all kinds of things, and that might happen once a term. But essentially, we're trying to not go down the route of rewarding children with stickers and prizes and grades and all those things. What we're trying to do is build that sense of momentum that comes from when you tussle with something and you do a good job and you learn it. Actually, that feels good, and you'll know that, and your listeners will know what that feels like when you do something you didn't think you were going to be able to do. Feels pretty good when you manage to achieve it.
And Alison, I mean, a lot of parents listening will be thinking, well, why isn't my school doing that? Why isn't this just nationally replicated? Because it's common sense, it sounds fantastic, well, and your kids are thriving. And yet we sort of hear that these days teachers cannot be as creative as they used to be able to be, and it's much more prescriptive. But it seems in your school that you can innovate.
Yes, it's difficult. I think that I would say, yes, every school could be like that. We had some fantastic visitors today from Kent to our schools. We had 15 teachers who came to visit, and they were all in different schools, in different leadership positions in schools. And we, by the end of the day, when they left, they were saying things like, we're so impressed with how confident your children are. We're so impressed with how calm everything seems to be. We're so impressed with the relationships between the adults and the children, and the adults together as a team. And, you know, there's a sense of hope that comes from an environment where children are able to surprise you with what they're able to do. And I think we've got into such an accountability agenda where school leaders, myself included, you know, we're all sort of wanting to make sure that we get the Ofsted badge and that we're doing as well as we can, and we're all terribly worried about that. But if we're not careful, we actually pursue the wrong things in the pursuit of what we think is the right thing to pursue. You see what I mean? So trying to achieve an Ofsted grade at all costs, which means that maybe you forget the core purpose of why you went into teaching, is a kind of hugely unfortunate consequence of a very high-stakes system where people are trying their absolute best. And I do believe we have a fantastic teaching profession in this country. I do believe that teachers want to do the best for their children, and they never seek to label children, or they never seek to write children off. But unintentionally, by trying to follow what they think is the right thing to do, I think sometimes schools get it wrong. I also think there are lots and lots and lots of schools over the country who are starting to be influenced by the stories of hope that we are sharing.
And I think, Alison, something that I read about was something distinctive as well about your school is your approach to, you know, CPD for teachers and this, I think it's called inquiry-based learning. Can you sort of explain what that means?
Okay, so in our school, our view would be that it's as important, if not more important, for the teachers to be engaged in learning as it is for the children to be engaged in learning, because, you know, you want teachers to be the best they can possibly be. You want them to be inspired and interested and excited about learning in order that they can inspire the children they work with. So many of our teachers are pursuing master's level qualifications. Many of our support staff have studied for degrees. We work with the Teacher Development Trust to do an audit of our professional learning practice, which means that we are, you know, you don't have to just take my word for it. This is, you know, independent interviews with people who talk to the staff about what else can we do to ensure that you are getting every opportunity to feel fulfilled in your role and also to learn and to take the next steps. And the children embrace that kind of energy that comes from everybody, you know, wanting to do the best they can. It's not about the adult sitting back and saying, right, well, I've done my learning, I just need to judge you and see how good you can be. This is about a whole community that's constantly brimming with ideas. And because of that, we are a very creative school. You know, we have, we've just built a Celtic roundhouse on our field, which we completed last year. And that was with working with a local company, EcoVrill, and working with Steve Gumbel, who lived in the woods in Broxbourne, and we created this superb roundhouse that 30 children can sit round inside with a fire pit in the middle. We can tell stories. We can, you know, imagine ourselves going back in time. The children are learning about the oral tradition from Celtic stories, all kinds of things. But the adults are learning as well as the children. It's just it's a very exciting place to be.
So presumably, I mean, it's about you get the impression that it's not just about the children learning, it's an entire learning community, really, that's sort of successfully led. Yeah. And I think the point about, although it doesn't seem that relevant perhaps to parents, about the CPD of teachers, if we're going and looking at schools, I think it's a good question, isn't it, to ask what the teachers are doing.
I think absolutely. I think when you're looking around schools, I mean, it is a bit like house hunting, I always say. I think when you step into a school where you feel the atmosphere is right for your child, it's like when you go and look at houses. You kind of go somewhere and you think, this is right. This is where I'd like to be. And I think one of the factors that you know, that is a really strong indicator is how welcoming is the school. You know, do the adults in the school look like they're enjoying themselves? Are they smiley? Are they happy to sort of stop and look and say hello? You know, do the children present themselves as being comfortable with people coming around the school? Are they open and willing to sort of talk to people, or are they perhaps a bit more reticent? You know, those kinds of things, that sort of, you can, when you've got a group of people together who want to work together, who are embracing all kinds of new opportunities, there's an energy that comes off that, which I hope is quite compelling, really. And the children definitely pick up on that. You know, the children are keen to learn. They want to share their learning. And yesterday evening, you know, I was so proud listening to the children. They were talking about the books that they'd read, the apps they were designing for computers, the forest school mapping they were doing, sort of orienteering and trying to create maps, how they were engaging in narrative. One of the children was talking about how he wanted to publish books and he was writing a book at home. You know, all this kind of sense of not doing something because your teacher tells you you've got to do it, but learning because it's life-giving.
And it sounds like it's very much sort of child-led, that those children are fulfilled, you know, they're following their own interests and they're allowed to.
It is, but within, you know, we teach the national curriculum. And, you know, we teach maths and English every day, and we're very keen to make sure that our children speak properly and learn their grammar. We teach French and science. You know, we have I wouldn't want listeners to sort of think, oh, this is a kind of experimental school where they all just go off and do their own thing all day long. It's not like that, but within a curriculum that's very well taught with confident teachers, there's always space to ask questions and to extend the inquiry, and I think that's the key. It's about engaging the learners so so that they know that if they've got something they want to ask, the teacher's not going to say, oh, well, sorry, that's not something we can look at now.
They and Alison, what about homework? Parents always wondering about, there's a question that yes. came in earlier about homework. Do you actually give homework? What's your approach to it?
Right. Homework's one of those things where you can never please everybody. What we try and do is offer some different choices in terms of challenge for homework, so the children can choose bronze, silver or gold, and they know that they've got that choice. And we all, you know, we focus mainly on reading homework when the children are little and phonics, and then we build more into mathematics. We might set a homework which is open-ended because we're going to be doing a period of study on, I don't know, World War II, and the children might be asked to make a model or go on some visits or find out over a period of weeks, and they do that sort of home learning together with their family. So there's a range of things that we do, but I think it's difficult to please everybody with homework. You know, however much you set, sometimes people say it's too much or too little. Where we've got children who find it hard to concentrate at home, then we offer a toast club. They can come in and have toast early in the morning and do their homework before school if that's convenient for them and for their family. So we're trying to please everybody. And I'm not sure we always get that one right, but we do try.
Alison, what does the environment of your school look different to other schools? I mean, do you have classes that set up the same as other schools, or do they differ, and how do they differ?
Our school it was built 30 years ago as a sort of an overspill for a school down the road that was too full, and it was only meant to last 5 years, and it's still standing. Our caretaker, Keith Andrew, is amazing. He keeps it running. So it's not a glamorous building by any means. It's a wonderful entry school with a nursery. But there's a very lively atmosphere, lots of artwork. Outside we've got lovely grounds, so we've got a forest school area where the children can make dens and light fires, supervised. we've got a double-decker bus that we bought on eBay, and we use the bus as a library and a nurture group space, and the bus has all been painted and decorated by graffiti artists with the children. So it's a high-quality space. So that attracts quite a lot of attention. We've got a music garden, which is an outdoor music facility that 100 children have played all at once with a conductor. And that's got a kitchen sink and cymbals and saucepans. And
it just sounds like bliss. We're all going to move to Wroxham.
It's lovely on a nice day.
Now, Alison, I'm sure you heard we have Caroline Creeby in the studio, who's obviously at a secondary school, so another great school, Sandring. I'm going to just bring you in, Caroline. And it's an interesting, you know, those children who may come from Wroxham, they have to transition into secondary at some point, where they'll probably be really disappointed after having a double-decker bus in the garden. And I just wanted to hear Caroline's response to what you've heard, Caroline. And does that type of learning continue into secondary?
Yeah, sure. Good question. I was very interested to hear Alison describing her school. I have been lucky enough to go there. It's a wonderful school, and we don't unfortunately get Wroxham learners coming over to St Albans, but we would very much welcome them too. Well, like most secondary schools, we take transition very seriously, and we really think about that process of changing environments. And we've got various kind of taster days and induction period. We have team building trips. We invite parents in to give their feedback about how that transition has gone into secondary school. In answer to your question, do the opportunities continue? And is there an emphasis on learning and challenging yourself? Yes, it does continue. I think, you know, certainly in my own mind, I've been very much influenced by the philosophy in creating Learning Without Limits, as have all the staff in our school. In fact, Alison Peacock-Kiney spoke at our school staff conference last year in February, and, you know, there was a lot of staff talking about going further to develop that kind of approach within lessons. And certainly the language of challenge is very common in classrooms in our school, and it's not to say it's exclusive, and certainly there'll be lots of schools where that would be the case. But the importance of, you know, not labeling oneself or not being labeled, pushing oneself, persisting, etc., would be common features of language and learning at school.
I think both of you have highlighted that the language is very important, and that's obviously it's important that parents are also, you know, on message as well at home. And I think it's very helpful to hear some of the key words and phrases that you're both using in your schools. I mean, at primary level, we hear about fixed mindset and growth mindset. Everybody knows now that that's the way to go. But I think replicating what you're doing in the school, if we could do it at home, it would be great, wouldn't it?
I suppose it would be, and certainly, something I see in nieces and nephews and things like that is that, and it's common, I see it in the students I teach, but students, as adults will do, they'll say, I can't do that, or that subject's not for me, I'm not able to do that, you know, and we can all get into that mindset of being able to, talk ourselves down or convince ourselves we're not able to do something. And I suppose it's a nudge, really. It's a nudge from a parent, a teacher, a peer, you know, a fellow student to say, well, not yet, maybe, but, you know, keep going or try another way or ask, you know, work with others. And I just think it is helpful, because not just in the classroom, but in our everyday lives, if we provide ourselves with a block to do something, we're not going to progress, whether it's, you know, in running or, you know, learning differentiation in maths, whatever it might be.
And presumably both of you, you know, for parents listening, I think what's come out tonight is about leadership. Schools have to have very strong leadership in order. Is that the relationship between leadership and culture? How does a school culture develop? Because we sort of hear as parents that the head teacher is very important, because it kind of trickles down what their philosophy is. Is that what you'd agree with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in the time I've worked at Sandringham, it's, you know, there's a very distinctive culture. Our strapline is everybody can be somebody, and we're committed to that. And it you see it in other examples of what we do, how we teach, and the opportunities we provide. But it's the idea that every person, every student, is able to achieve, and it's very difficult to even use the word potential, because as Alison was saying, you know, we've got to allow ourselves to be surprised. And I think that's the thing, I can't conceive of what I could actually be like if I really pushed myself, and so I shouldn't, you know, look at a student, look at their behavior or maybe a scruffy exercise book and think, oh, well, they're not going to achieve, because we don't know. We really don't know. And actually, if encouraged, if supported, and it's getting to that point that Alison was saying about intrinsic motivation and where you take ownership. You know, if you get to the point, or when you get to that point with students, you know, when you see them in a subject or a discipline or a skill they really enjoy, well, you know, the sky's the limit, really.
Was the amazing thing that Alison mentioned. I mean, I can understand secondary school children taking control, but that was, Alison, you're talking about primary school. You're talking about year one, year two children taking control of their learning. That is mind-blowing for me as a parent. How does that work?
Well, I think in many, many schools, well, hopefully all schools where there's a foundation stage, nursery and reception class, the climate for learning there is about children making choices and decisions about what they're going to play with and when they're going to play with, they're going to be indoors, outdoors, what they're going to choose to work with. In too many schools, that stops at the end of reception, and year one turns into a place where you wait to be told by the teacher what you've got to do. In fact, I was involved with the Cambridge Primary Review, which is the largest study of primary education that's been published for the last 40 years. And one of the aspects of the research was that we conducted inquiry with children. And one of the year one children that was interviewed said, sitting on the carpet is a waste of your life. And there are plenty of year one classrooms all over the country where too many children sit on the carpet. And if they feel they're wasting their life, then they're stopping thinking that this is something they have control over. They're just waiting to be told what they've got to do next. So, of course, we want highly disciplined children who behave with respect and who are kind to each other and who know how to listen. But we also want children who can self-regulate their behaviour. So from the very earliest days in school, children are encouraged to make choices and make decisions and to explain their decisions. And we just continue that through from nursery onwards. And for us, we find that leads that to children who are incredibly confident. And by the time they get to the age where they would be joining a school like Caroline School, you know, hopefully they are really excited about the next challenge of a new secondary school, but they're also capable of recognising that they are the ones that can make the difference for themselves. They don't have to be passive learners waiting for a teacher to inspire them or not. You know, they're not sitting back waiting to be, you know, entertained in the classroom, that they are wanting to learn for the sake of learning for themselves. That's what we try and teach them. And I think if you get that right by the time children are 11, hopefully Caroline and her colleagues have a much better chance of doing brilliantly with them as they move on to secondary school. Would you agree, Caroline?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I think it's we always try to obviously encourage students, you know, and support them in an extrinsic way. And I think all schools will do, you know, a good job at that. But there's just a very, very big difference when a student is really committed to a particular subject, and it's clear that it kind of takes their learning to a different level, just because they are willing to explore, they're willing to ask those questions, to spend that extra bit of time. And I just think that, as you were saying before, when you actually are motivated in that way and are really interested, that's when you see real genuine enjoyment, rather than, you know, just kind of doing a fun activity and being satisfied for a few minutes. But once you actually learn and do something that you're really interested in, and you take on that ownership yourself, there's nothing that can quite match, I don't think.
And what would both of you like to see happening in those children's homes in terms of learning? What's your sort of big tip for parents in terms of their relationship to the school? What should it be? You have answered that a little bit, because Alison, because you mentioned, you know, you encourage partnership and conversation, but what would you like to see happening at home? We assume it might happen a little bit more, parental involvement at the primary level, but at secondary, parents think they can bow out a little bit and don't have as much control.
Yeah, sure. From my experience, I wouldn't necessarily say, I've just always been continually impressed by the parents that I meet. I don't know, I suppose this might seem a little bit cheesy, but a bit of advice, you know, someone once gave to me was, you know, be interesting, but be interested. And it's the being interested in people, I just think, is quite a useful kind of starting point, because, you know, just being interested in, you know, your children, obviously, and your partner, your friends, etc., is quite important. And asking questions like, yeah, I know this is obviously really obvious, but, you know, tell me about your day. But it's exploring beyond that, you know, what did you enjoy, why, tell me more about that, etc. I think sometimes there can be a comfort zone issue in terms of all of the subjects that are studied, and, you know, certainly although I'm a teacher, I'm not an expert in subjects beyond my own subject specialism. So you may not always feel completely in your comfort zone in terms of subject knowledge, but you can always have conversations about learning and about what is tricky, what went well, how does it make you feel, what's next on the horizon, etc. So I just think, as I'm sure all parents are, but I just think being interested in the sort of what and the how of the learning and the other students and that kind of thing can just, you know, keep that conversation going and focused on learning. And then, you know, when students say, when children say, you know, I can't do that or I struggle with that, you know, it's just, again, another opportunity just to, you know, nudge or encourage, which, again, I'm sure many parents will do.
Naturally. I think that's a lovely way of putting it, isn't it, Alison? If they are struggling, it's an opportunity for the parent to step in and encourage.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's very common with younger children. If you ask them about their day, they say they can't remember or they didn't do anything.
That's right.
And the reason for that is because it's all lived experience. They can't divide it up. You know, conceptually, it's very hard as a young child to divide up your day and think, well, what did I do? What was I doing at breakfast time? And then what did I do when I arrived in school? And then what did we do before lunch? And so on and so forth. So for the children, it's just one continuous experience. So my sense would be with the youngest children, it's about, as Caroline says, it's about listening, it's about being interested in them, but it's also, I don't think it's about quizzing them about their day as much as it is about taking the things that they're interested in and helping to sort of fan the flames of that interest. So, you know, if they're interested in making models, more opportunity to make models. If they're interested in finding out about living things, you know, more opportunities for them to help you in the garden or go with them to the park or walk along by the stream. You know, learning is something that isn't necessarily book-based. It's not necessarily school-based. You know, learning is lifelong. And as I said at the beginning, you know, all the time every child is learning. You know, you've only got to look at a baby. They're just programmed to learn. And that doesn't have to be formal. And the best kind of learning is with the people that you love. So, you know, I would always say to parents, enjoy your children. Enjoy their childhood. They grow up so fast.
We have indeed heard that before. And Alison, you've had so many international visitors to your school. What are the things that they're always surprised by? We're quite interested in that international dimension. What are they, you know, they've come from Japan or places like Thailand and Zambia. What are they surprised by?
They are almost always, they're taken aback by the polite confidence of the children, the way that the children can talk very coherently about the decisions they're making, about their learning, about their enthusiasm for school. Creativity is something, I mean, particularly we've had an ongoing, there's a research project in Japan that's ongoing looking at our school and some other schools in the UK. They're just publishing Creating Learning Without Limits in Japanese. And what the Japanese professors are constantly amazed by is they say, every time we come to your school, there is something new. So their expectation of school is that it's pretty static and the same all the time. And our learning environment is constantly changing and evolving. And, you know, hopefully it's a very interesting place to be. So that notion of creativity and innovation and entrepreneurialism is something that many of the countries that actually our country is looking to say, how can we improve our standards? They're looking to us and saying, how can we improve creativity? It's quite ironic, isn't it?
It is indeed. And at secondary, Caroline, is there room for creativity when it's so exam-driven, you know, by necessity?
Yes, it's, you know, it is obviously difficult, and it's a difficult tension. I'm sure lots of schools will wrestle with it, but it's something that we're committed to. And I think part of the reason why is because we don't know necessarily what students will be interested in. And as far as possible, we want to broaden opportunities as much as we can within the constraints of, you know, government measures and performance tables and things like that. And certainly in terms of opportunities, we encourage, you know, project-based learning through different projects in different year groups. We have a modular curriculum in particular years where students can opt for subjects, you know, which wouldn't necessarily be typical, like forensic science or debating or Latin, for example, that wouldn't always be a standard part of the curriculum. So in terms of opportunities, we do as much, well, we are always looking for more opportunities, but to provide that within the curriculum, beyond the curriculum, the extracurricular provision is looked at very carefully to maximise the skills of our staff, etc. However, in terms of creativity more generally, approaches within lessons in any subject are certainly thought about very carefully to maximise opportunities for students to learn in the most effective ways, which, you know, may be creative. You know, they may not be creative at times. They might look more traditional, depending on what is being learned in the best way, whether it's a skill or, you know, it's a new aspect of knowledge, for example. But that is something we would pride ourselves on, is striving towards providing opportunities for creativity in terms of what is studied and how it's studied.
And I think Sandringham is actually renowned for its creativity, isn't it? It's got a theatre, which is very striking. Most schools don't have their own theatres, so it's quite special, isn't it?
Yeah, no, we are extremely lucky, and we've got an amazing theatre team, that we've got dedicated staff there, and obviously it's an amazing opportunity for students in our school, not just the students that might do drama or dance or the musicians, and obviously they do perform. We had our autumn concert this week, which was spectacular in the theatre, but all students, just through the curriculum, through whatever they learn, will be performing, they'll be watching, you know, plays, etc., in the theatre. So yeah, we are, you know, we're very lucky, we've got fantastic premises.
Fantastic. Now, we've got a couple of questions from parents, so get ready, ladies. One of them is about their child is actually moving from Britain to America. And this mum is very interested in your views and what she could do to help their child, you know, with the transition. Any views on the American education system that would be helpful for her to know? And basically, she's interested in the fact that we're in a global community more than ever. And how do we help our children sort of embrace that, or should we, that kind of global outlook? She's obviously having to move to America for work. And we just want to hear your best pieces of advice, really, to her moving her child out of a British education system into an American one.
Well, I was in Washington last week, which was an amazing experience, and met some fabulous American colleagues. I would say my experience of meeting them was that they were incredibly positive people, very welcoming. You know, I would hope that this young person will make a very positive transition. Obviously, you know, it's a big step for any family just moving to the next town, leave alone moving to another country. So clearly there'll be a process to go through, but I would hope that you know, that there would be every opportunity for the child to feel very welcomed and to settle well. And if the family feels happy, if the family feels confident, that has such an impact, especially on young children. You know, young children pick up the vibe very, very quickly. When things are a bit tricky or things aren't going very well amongst the family, the children always know, even if parents think they've kept everything away from them. And if the family's going through a stressful time, the children always know. But equally, if there's change and the family's all sort of coping and helping each other, that will be the most important thing. And I would say, you know, try and establish relationships with the school and go in and visit and help if you can and so on as part of joining a new community.
And I think what we've said tonight is that ethos, you know, that everything is one, that learning should be enjoyable and everything, all the challenges embraced, is something the family might be able to carry with them, no matter, you know, where they land, that actually that everything could be an adventure and a challenge, would you think, yes. Alison?
I would say absolutely yes, but then I am an optimist. but I would always say, you know, it's the job of the family. You know, as a parent, it's your job to love your child the best, and it's your job. You know, I consider myself as a mum. I have to be the strongest advocate for my daughters. That's my job as a mother. And, you know, there's no substitute for family. So, of course, it's ideal when the school also embraces the wider family as well as the child, because then it's so much easier to have shared experiences and, you know, support each other in terms of helping the child do the best they can. And something like a major transition across the Atlantic, of course, you know, there will be a need for everybody to communicate as best they possibly can, so that the outcome is as good as it can be for everybody.
Thank you.
It'd be amazing.
And Caroline, have you had experience of children moving into your school from different countries, or experience of?
Yes, we have similar reasons. Parents moving because of work, and so children arrive. I think, you know, that I think all the points outlined, you know, what I'm sure every family would experience. And, you know, it's, you know, very good advice to see it as a challenge to be faced together and certainly embraced. I think communication is just ultimately really key, because I think sometimes people can feel anxiety when there are unknowns, I suppose. So moving countries, or even just moving towns and that kind of thing, schools ultimately, despite still being schools, will just have different communication channels and, you know, different systems. But, you know, a telephone call, or a, you know, preferably I'm sure a, you know, a face-to-face meeting with someone in the school about how things work, and an opportunity to chat to students, I think is always a very good opportunity, a rich one to get to know how a school works.
Okay, one last question from parents for both of you is about stress around exam time. And I know primary school children I don't know if they do SATs at Wroxham, but
we all have to do SATs.
You have to do SATs. What would your advice be to parents who are worried about how they can best support their children around exam time? Alison, are you first?
Yes, do you know, I mean, in our school we try as much as we can to minimise anxiety, and you know, we're trying very hard to say to the children, this is an opportunity to show your personal best, and we bring them in and they have breakfast, and Steve Davey, one of our teachers, was even serenading them with a guitar last year. And, you know, we do everything we can to put the children at their ease, but ultimately they know the adrenaline pulses, you know, it's a test. And some children get very anxious about things like that throughout their life, which is why tests are, you know, quite harsh with some children. I think all that you can do as a parent is to be there, to be supportive. I think as a parent, actually, you probably worry more about your child than they worry themselves. I think that's one of the things that happens, is that, you know your child's going through something, so you can't concentrate at work because you're thinking about how they're getting on. They might be fine, but you worry on their behalf. Just trying to be as calm as you can, as supportive as you can, and certainly not adding to the panic. Easier said, I know.
Exactly. And Caroline, one last point from you about that.
I think maybe one thing to consider is that there is stress and anxiety that will come from a fear of failure. And I think, obviously, opportunities to have discussions around the things that have been outlined about the sense of achievement, you know, personal best, etc., I think is absolutely vital. Getting that right is tricky, and certainly, you know, at school we offer, you know, personalised support to, you know, target any students that might feel that more than others, because it is inevitable, unfortunately, inevitable consequence of having such high stakes exams. But I suppose, just kind of speaking from experience as a teacher, I think some stress might be avoidable, and that might be around, you know, obviously when you're facing a big challenge, there is the temptation to maybe put your head in the sand and maybe to avoid the kind of preparation that's needed, and then it gets to a crunch point when there seems like an insurmountable amount of work to do, and then at that point, do you just try and do it and cram and not sleep, or do you just then give up and have a meltdown, for example? So I think it's obviously very sensible for all students to be as organised as they can and actually approach, you know, their learning over time, and try not to fall into the traps that might arise if one avoids their studies.
Yeah, very good advice. I think we all know students like that, or have been students like that. Well, listen, thank you so much, ladies. We've got a lot to digest tonight. And thanks a million, Alison Peacock and Caroline Creeby. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.